Good evening. Thank you for coming, everyone. I'm delighted to see so many faces. You're always worried that two people are going to show up, you and your co-organizer. But I see that our poets have drawn a much more impressive crowd than I expected. So welcome to Poetry Matters. My name is Eli McLaren. I teach Canadian poetry and the history of the book at McGill University. Together with my colleagues Miranda Hickman and Michael Nicholson, I am facilitating Poetry Matters, which is a series of events designed to allow people to gather around the art of the poem, and also to reaffirm Montreal's reputation as a city of poetry. Right from the beginning, there's been a lot of interest, and I think that we feel both of these things are important. Our theme this year is making well. This phrase is intended to bring two issues to the fore. First of all, the craft or the virtuosity of art to make a poem well. And secondly, well-being in mind and body. So what makes a poem good aesthetically? What makes a poem good therapeutically? Does health speak, as Percy Bysshe Shelley implied when he wrote that the poet ought personally to be the happiest, the best, the wisest, and the most illustrious of men? Can poems heal, as the early 20th century Montreal poet Marian Osborne claimed when she wrote, inviting her reader slash lover to come to her in the dreaming dusk, that thou mayest bless with whispering wings of peace and tenderness, with healing touch. How does poetry heal? Through anguish, through self-expression, through laughter. This is our broad theme and interest this year, the relation between making poetry well and making people well. I'll just mention a few announcements before we get to our poets. First of all, tomorrow, the Quebec Writers Federation is running a creative writing workshop and information session at McGill University at 5:30 p.m. The session is oriented to students. The QWF is a Quebec-wide membership organization that hosts events, organizes workshops, and provides resources and opportunities for writers in Quebec. Tomorrow's event will be a free surrealist creative writing workshop run by poet and performer Rachel McCrum, and the title is A Ribbon Wrapped Around a Bomb. At 6:30, Rachel will lead an info session on the QWF and what it can offer to students who are interested in pursuing creative writing as a hobby or as a career. That location again is McGill University, the Arts Building, room 160, starting at 5:30 p.m. Second announcement, please stay. There'll be readings through the first hour and 15 minutes tonight, but please feel free to linger. We have the space until 9 p.m. We have some food and drink. We'd love to meet you more informally. Please buy a book. This is one way to contribute to the life of poetry. We have a dazzling array of the poet's work spread out on the table there at the back. We know the prices. We can make change. We're financially competent. So please address yourself to Gavin and buy a book when we're done. Mentioning Gavin and books, I'd like to announce, some of you know that the Scrivener Creative Review just published its latest issue last night. So that's the literary magazine attached to the Department of English at McGill University. Please feel free to browse a copy or buy one as well. Okay, our two poets. First will speak Mark DiSaverio. Mark DiSaverio's poems and translations have appeared in such publications as CNQ, Maisonneuve, Hazlitt, and Partisan. Poet and critic Shane Nielsen acknowledged DiSaverio's first book, Sanatorium Songs, as the greatest poetry debut from the past 25 years. DiSaverio was recognized among the top 10 the world's finest English language haiku poets in 2011 by Simply Haiku magazine. And in 2016, DiSaverio was recipient of the City of Hamilton Arts Award for the Best Emerging Writer. In 2017, his poetry was broadcast on BBC Radio 3. His debut became a bestseller in both the USA and Canada, And he published Ship of Gold, The Essential Poems of Émile Nelligan, which we have on sale this evening. And it appeared in 2017 through Montreal's Véhicule Press. His Crito di Volta, an epic, will be appearing in the spring of 2020. I've been reading Marc's poems, and I find them to be cut gems of sadness. They touch on love and psychiatric hospitals. They touch on flowers and funerals, on starlight and suicide, and they do so through form, sonnet, villanelle, haiku, forms that have strength to be recognizably themselves. In Sanatorium Songs, Orpheus, the legendary poet and singer, blends and merges with Hephaestus, the crippled god of fire and forges, producing poems that are earthy and morbid and elegant. In Ship of Gold, his translation of Nelligan, Marc thanks his father for turning a tool shed into a writing studio, knocking a skylight into the roof. And something of this transformation informs his poems, which likewise use death and darkness to make us feel life and light. Asa Boxer is a poet and critic based in Montreal. His recent books include Etymologies in 2016, Friar Biard's Primer to the New World in 2013, and Skullduggery, published in the Signal Edition series in 2011. His debut book, The Mechanical Bird, received the Canadian Authors Association Prize for Poetry, and his cycle, The Workshop, won the 2004 CBC En Route Literary Award. His work has appeared in collections such as The New Canon, an anthology of Canadian poetry, the Oxford Poetry Broadside series, and the Best Canadian Poetry in English in 2009 and 2012, which is where I first encountered his work. His latest chapbook is Field Notes from the Undead. He's the founder of the Montreal International Poetry Prize. Asa's poetry is remarkable for its satiric revelry. It sparkles with ludic freedom, with impudence, with incongruity, with wit. A shopping trip to IKEA is rendered in terms of Dante's Inferno, with three-line stanzas that arch an eyebrow at the master's terza rima. Merciless Caprice reduces literary history to a series of seven poems about guns. The discovery of New France is rehearsed in the idiom of the medieval traveler Sir John Mandeville, pinpointing the bizarre feelings of irony that we have today when we read a founding document like the Jesuit Relations, which reports the truth of so distant an experience that we cannot help but perceive it as folly. Here, a Scotch brogue is explicitly called for, there, a musical French accent. Some poems are carnivalesque, some are libertine. What, pray tell, is the innocent lecturer to do with the word ichor in the line, "The ichor in my knickers is swollen pretty sore"? Other poems turn genres upside down, as when the poet, instead of praying, receives a frank dressing down from a laconic god. This is poetry made well by irony, and that great desideratum of the melancholy writer, laughter. Please welcome Marc and then Asa.
Do you mind if I just move a little bit of the things around there? Okay, never mind.
I can move that.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I've been with one of my translations of Arthur Rimbaud's Voyelle, which explores synesthesia. Ah, noir, blanc, y, rouge, vert, oh, bleu. Voyelle. Someday your secret pregnancies I'll tell. A black corset of blazing hair, he flies a buzz above a nasty funk. Bays of shade. E steam's intense naivety. White kings, haughty glacial spears. Shadows, shivering. I crimsons, blood, spit, lovely lips that laugh in wrath, repent in drunkenness. You, cycles, Viridian seas, divine vibrations, peace of cattle scattered pastures, peace of wrinkles which alchemy imprints on the high and the studious brows. O virginal striders of trumpets supreme, silences diagonal with angels and realms. O Lomega, his eyes violet beam. Now, before I continue, I just wanted to—I wanted to thank some people. I wanted to thank McGill, Miranda, Eli, and Asa, of course, for making this all possible. I'm very humbled to be here. Couldn't be more appreciative. I'm just going to continue with the reading now. Next, I'm going to read Orphaestus, which was mentioned by Eli, which is a combination of Orpheus and Hephaestus, which I wrote when I was about 21 or 22, and I'm going to recite this one from my brother, Paul, who's here with us, who was an early champion of the poem. When it was taking its original form, it took 9 years to write, actually. Most of it in that 1 year, but then later more editing. Go, my songs, verse through the ears of the smilers in their sleep, bridge them to their wakes, sound both familiar as a tick when heard with a talk, and strange as the aura of a living room where a family along with CNN counts down the minutes of the last day on Earth. Go to my songs, blast the campers off the pigging back of great-great-great-grandpa Dada. Go to the poets skipping over the limbo bar of poetry. Go, my songs, inspire the overthrow of phony poets professing to pliable neophytes. Behold, here's how to leap over poetry's limbo bar and into the Antigonish. Go, my songs, bridge an ephebic seer to his first awakening. Go to the tear-skinned, wasp-cored souls that hang my offshooting street. Tell them, if you have been granted equality, you have not received it. Go to those fuckstick rich kids cultivating an enviable ennui and reading campy pamphlets on how to become a heroin addict who cultivate cliches as ways and aim to be properly impoverished. Bring, sing, get morning bells to ring. Gotterdammerung. Well, I, the wise Mo-Siberian, am still young. Go like a closet moth fluttering toward the sun. Go, my wannabe muses, transmute into muses. Go through women who awaken aroused, who see their rosy breasts at dawn, then fondle them, then smile. Go knowing passion is vision, and compassion is vision, and the world's first incision. Go, my songs, but try one world at a time. Go as a soft-songed, warm wind of my blood sister's spirit lesion. Go. Two songs toward them. Electrify both dance floors and psych wards. Try to soothe a worldwide wound as blindly as heating bathwater would overflow the blob of your sculpturally body. Let the old recluse see sunset's red salamander, Cirrus. Let your tyrant torched melody lines revein poetry. Feel free to possess Ezra's tweed skeletons digging on the island of the dead, because I only hear the splashing of his jewels in the sea. Go, you club-footed songs. Go in bulldozing throngs over America's rhetoric, then shroud it with sheets of its amateur anthems. Cardiac arrest the tyrant's rhetoricians, including myself if I should become one. Nerve-rack all the tyrants with your by-produced seductiveness. Inspire rioters to hang all the tyrants with slack. Go, my songs, assassinate the assassins, then sing me and bring me their hit lists. Go, my Manix afflatus. No backturns wind will sweep the shardy stars. No agency will waste nature's nurse. No iron hand will bend your bars of verse. Go, my songs, go whisperingly singing to the silken souls of those who are hunchbacked in media. Go, my songs, bitch in the voice of my brothers, sing in that of my fathers. Go toward those who are feeling their ages or not, whirl in their bodies' wisdoms, then spin on the tops of your high notes and halt. In those who see, we know they are broken. Oh, peacekeepers in pieces. Oh, hunchbacked in the media. Oh, so deformed, unmockables, whose damages they nor I can estimate. Then hum for them softly when you are acquainted. Tell them you wish you could fix them with your presence. Tell them you know a less fortunate boy, even if he does not exist. Tell them you know a less fortunate girl, a teenaging degenerate. Go now, me and mine, to those I still am too proud to sleep with. Songs toward and through them all, but jive with what is sleepless. Chorus in the souls of the hideously bodied.
Sorry about this.
Okay, I'll read a villanelle from this book. Called Code Yellow. A code yellow in medicine, in medical terminology, is when a psychiatric patient has eloped from a hospital or escaped from a hospital. And in this this villanelle, the speaker, who has supposedly run away, since the title implies it, I'm giving you that, is writing to the doctor who's taking care of him. So he's speaking to the doctor directly. And he says, "My shard-studded club feet blaze me astray. Hallucinated staffs wind their tracks across the stars. I sing my songs of stars along my way, which dot-connecting fireflies display. Here, there, and there, my blank avatars. My shard-studded club feet blaze me astray, away from the shadow crosses of mint and man which weigh the hereditary rosary beads of wars. I sing my songs of stars along my way, because my eye light poked through the papal mache, whose thorns of darkness tithe my tears and pricked my scars. My shard-studded club feet blaze me astray, and stray me ablaze. This music is measureless as a light and vain verve of a runaway, breaking. I hear the universe's ultimate bars. I sing my songs of stars along my way. And I'm vivace with vision. I'll tell without a sigh someday. The stranger's staff still wind his tracks across the stars. My shard-studded club feet blaze me astray. I sing my songs of stars along my way." I'm going to move into Emil Nalagar now and read a couple of his poems. I go on about his biography. I figure most of you guys know who he is. If not, you can read about it in the book. He wrote all of his work between the ages of 16 and 19. He was kind of like the Rimbaud of Canada, only better spirited and kinder and in some ways more musical. So I'll start with one that's called Soir d'hiver, or Winter Evening, which is a very well-known one. Okay. "Oh, how the snow has snowed, my window panes a yard of frost. Oh, how the snow has snowed. What is this will to live my most despite this pain in me? In me, and all the ponds lie frozen. My soul is dark. Where do I live? Where do I go? All my hope lies frozen. I am the new Norway from which fair skies have disappeared. Mourn, you February birds. Mourn the evil chill of all. Mourn, you February birds. Mourn my tears. Mourn my roses up in the boughs of the juniper tree. Oh, how the snow has snowed. My window panes a yard of frost. Oh, how the snow has snowed. What is this will to live my most with all this pain in me, in me? And moving on to another really fantastic poem here called The Wine Song. All things mingle in the brilliance of gaiety. And the chorus of the songbirds, like my shrouded fancies, proclaim a prelude through my open window. O beautiful evening, O joyous May evening, an offish organ beats out cold monotonies. And sun rays, like purple swords, pierce the heart of the dying day. I am happy, I am happy. Pour red wine in the singing crystal, pour it again and forever. That I may forget the funerals of my days, the hate I feel from malevolent masses. I am happy, I am happy. Vive le vin et l'art. Oh no, I too had dreams of writing verses worth reciting, lines of distant autumn breezes passing in the fog. It's in the sphere of bitter jeers to be a heartful poet, object of scorn, born to be fathomed by only the moonlight and storms. Girls, I drink to you who laugh in my path, where sublimity smiles with open arms. And above all, I drink to you, moody-browed men who despise me, who shall not shake my held-out hand. While the gloryful heavens are flooded with stars, while the psalm now resounds for the spring's next revival, I have not cried for the dying of day, and I grope forth through my gloomy youth. I am happy, I am happy. Hooray for these nights in May. And I am madly happy, songs the drunkenness. Could it be that I'm happy with living? Is my heart finally healed from loving? I am happy, I am happy. The clocks now strike, wind smells of night. And while wine flows in the ray-flinging waves, I am happy. So happy with my booming belly laughs. So happy I fear I will cry. I'm just going to read from Crito now. This is the epic poem that I've completed recently. I'm going to read from a section called Holy Lyrics. So this is a part in the book where, despite, kind of like the play within a play kind of thing in Shakespeare, you have these lyrics within an epic, these poems within the poem. And basically at this point in the book, Crito has begun to, he believes, reach Christ consciousness, and he's hearing the voice of Christ being channeled through him. And so this is what he's, in the story, thinks he's is being channeled to him, through him, and toward those around him. But this is just a lyric poem that he writes to himself. It's not really to anyone. It's just randomly here. The stranger now saddles me into my bliss. I wear the rising sun at my heart's core. White roses bloom beneath a supernovae. If I should stir a sleeping alley beggar on my wind-backed way, I may give him a glimpse of his daydream's paradise. While our opening eyes might soon meet through the wintry winds of this late summer dawn. I feel the stranger's whip now heal me. I am the dew-bowed one who flings his eye light while he sings, who strayed his white way blazing forth like one light beam, who hung with the waifs and the whores and the lepers, the touch with fire maniacal in the black-eyed black night, who hung with Peter in the twilight of the dawn of Gotterdammerung, whose bright white wrists conduct the wisps of salamander cirruses up in rightly skies. His wrath is wrought and wrung throughout my hands, and I'm not asking you to worship me, nor give me your coat. I do not care what you can do for me. I need no love but my own father's love. Yet, in the end, oh, in the end, just walk beside me and be my friend. Just walk beside me and be my friend. And Now, take his wrath and love with my long sword of light, my kiss of sky and sea meeting upon thee, my dew-balmed lips not quavering, no, but rising with this vermilion greeting, and I, like a falcon, judge the game beneath me, the act of humankind, and I down circle on some, yet I, of course, leave alone the others who are saved still, and some to be eternally. The stranger steers me while I veer you toward the vortex of utopia, the era of ease. Will you fight the draw of my father's breath? Reach Mount Zion by Gotterdammerung, silkily down spiral like some funeral lilies. So I'm just going to read a couple more and then off to Asa. I'll just read one more from this section and then I'm going to get to a part that Asa and I wrote together, which is really the highlight for me to read. I can't wait to get to that, but just before I do, I'll just read this really quick sonnet from this holy lyrics area. When one esteems one's reputation in heaven more than one's reputation on earth, one soul, a sudden, transmutes from stillborn blue cocoon to white-winged butterfly birth, one must prize one's reputation in the Creator's heart more than one's reputation in his creation's eyes to ensure a place in or anywhere near his paradise.
Okay.
So this is a part that Asa and I wrote together, which is in the epic poem. But so I sent, long story short, Asa co-wrote these 90 lines with me, and he's given full credit, of course. He did such a brilliant job. And he's taught me so much recently about cosmology, and specifically the electrical universe, which is discussed in the section that he and I have worked on together. The background is the Krito, the epic, the protagonist or the hero, is in he's in Hamilton, Ontario, at the cliff that there's up a western on the western mountain. There's a cliff, and there's a place called the Flat Rock where he is giving the second half of a very, very long speech that he had begun earlier in the day at McMaster University in the story, that is. And then now it is at nighttime, and he's talking about cosmology, the stars, talking about the electrical universe, and you can picture, you know, it's getting dark out there. They have a bonfire. There's all these students that had been there listening to him speak and prophesize, I guess, during the day. Now they're coming back at night to hear him, and so this is. This is the speech that Asa and I wrote that is in this story, that is in this epic poem. So this is from Il Mortarista 2. Could it be that it's an invisible yet detectable electricity connecting the dots of the stars of the universe, keeping the suns and the planets in their places? Could electricity, that filamentous force, outmatter gravity? I flatly sing into overdrive. The moonish half-light of science has eclipsed the suns of mythology. And the keys to astrophysics, to nanophysics, to the gears of existence are bundled inside electricity. I believe, with Velikovsky, that myths of yore now jangle these keys, that the incredible events, both natural and, to our minds, supernatural, the tales of above and below depicted in ancient myths, cannot be accounted for as mere aberrations of the psyche, as Jung would have it, or of historical subterfuge, as Graves would have it. No, let's credit the gifts of our ancient ancestors. They told, as we tell, what they perceive with their keen senses. Dismissing what another has witnessed is stealing another's heart, dishonoring his mind, denigrating his life. We must not stoop so low, must only stoop to come down from the plinth of our self-congratulation. Only to ply our imaginations to the rich realms in which others have suffered and thrived and recorded their riveting lives. These strange to us phenomena in ancestral skies can only be explained by electricity, by our sister magnetism, and by our sister light, by the careful plodding paths, the dead ends, the incremental advances of observation under the done and unspectacular aegis of natural philosophy, the true physics. Even today, as I speak, steadfast intelligences reveal how electrical discharges created in laboratories appear exactly as cave paintings all over the world. Take, for instance, the wheel of emanation, call it plasma, call it quantum fluid, the Higgs field, or what you will, for ether has many names. This wheel is its mark and seal, which reveals itself both large and small, above and below, by microscope and telescope and magnet, as a nebula. For what is a snake that devours its tail on every continent? And what the cosmic column pinwheeling the low ancient sun? And also, in every continent thus, I have Amos to thank for opening the eyes of my eyes. Amos bows with his orange-yellow torch. The crowd explodes into more ovations. It was during a vision near Armageddon when Amos, a soldier of the Israeli army, realized his callings as seer, cosmologist, and poet. He returned to Montreal, his birthplace, penning and lecturing on numerous subjects, especially verse and cosmology. His father, Avi, died when Amos was a teenager, and so the great mentors of that language-enraged city helped raise Dude Diaphanous Amos, teaching him to read music and compose in heroic pentameter. With the enshrining of falsehoods, and among the flimsy paper generations teeming and organizing into ever greater corporations, with the age of giants at hand, Amos picked away at the wallpapers of mendacity to reveal the dry rot, and he dedicated his lives like life to the revival of vital ether, the lost, most essential element, which lies at the heart of creation, the zero at the crux of the Cartesian plane, the origin and sum of all measures. To this principle and to the Holy Spirit, as much as to verse, he dedicated himself, jangling by my raving ear the keys to our deepest questions that, by my raving mouth, I might impart like a host of flaming arrows or a many-tongued lightning bolt to you, my loving listeners. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.